This episode of She Explores is brought to you by Merrill. Merrill exists to give you all you need to discover the simple yet profound power of the trail. They believe the trail is for everybody and everybody. Merrill's goal is to provide thoughtfully designed, rigorously tested products that overdeliver on performance, versatility, and durability. Because when you've got air in your lungs and good shoes on your feet, you've got everything you need. Stay tuned for later in the episode. We'll talk with Noelle Russell, a hiker in the Bay Area of California and a member of the She Explores team, about the trails she loves to wander. Learn more at Merrill.com. That's Merrill.com. I'm Gail Straub, and you're listening to She Explores. How are you doing today?
I'm fine. I'm a little tired.
Why are you tired?
So this whole week, I've been taking public transit as a way of, like, you know, being more sustainable, eco-friendly type of thing, and be less dependent on my car. So I decided to take the bus for the whole week. I've been walking a lot. That's what's been tiring, is that I've been walking a lot. I think I probably walked like 20 miles this week.
Whoa.
Because it's been like walking to the bus station, getting on. And then for most of my days, I have two locations I have to go to. So I have a morning garden and an afternoon garden. So I have to take the bus three times a day instead of twice a day. So it's been a lot of walking.
Wow. What spurred you wanting to change your transportation style this week?
For Earth Day, actually. It was Earth Day, so I was like, okay, I'll give it a try for Earth Day. And then I'm like, okay, I'm going to try for the whole week. And yeah.
This is Cindy Villasenor. She's an Enrich LA garden ranger who strives to live a low-waste lifestyle. She also loves camping, gardening outside of work, and eats vegan. One of the things that I really admire about her story is that she didn't grow up doing any of these things, but keeping herself open to learning and opportunities have led her to where she is today. I also admire that she hasn't left people behind in choosing a low-waste and vegan lifestyle. Instead, she invites people in through leading by example. Cindy knows there's no such thing as perfection, so why make others feel bad that they're not doing enough? Cindy's is one of those paths that's best walked from the beginning.
So I grew up in LA, more specifically in Sumlin, Tahunga, which is a little town in the Los Angeles area. Or I don't know if it's technically the San Fernando Valley, but that's where I grew up. And we lived in, for the first 15 years of my life, we lived in an apartment complex right next to a park and some other apartment complexes. And it was on the main street, which is called Foothill Boulevard. Mm. That's where I grew up.
What'd you do for fun as a kid?
As a kid, well, some of the things I remember. First of all, since we lived in an apartment complex, I was playing like house and like hide and go seek with the kids in the apartment complex. But one thing I do like really remember is that when I would go to the park, I would go to the park a lot because it was like literally like down the street. And I remember that when the sprinklers would go on in the park during the day, like at least for summer vacation, and the baseball field would get watered as well, it would get muddy. And I remember that I would go and just slide in the mud. So I remember that. I also remember collecting rocks. Now that I can think of that, I used to collect rocks when I was younger. We used to have these planters inside the apartment complex, where they would have, you know, plants and all that. It was on concrete, but they had soil in them and all that. I could also remember that I would dig up to find little bugs and stuff like that.
Does that some of that come back to you now as you work in a garden?
Yeah, I've been thinking about that lately. I was like, wait a minute. I don't think I was exposed to what I do today as in gardening. I wasn't literally exposed by like my mom or anything like that. But now that I'm thinking about it, there was little moments of me, you know, doing some exploration, whether it was me finding worms in the soil or me sliding in the mud at the park and things like that.
Mm-hmm. So you live in LA now too, right?
Yes. Yes, I live in Glendale, which is a little bit closer to downtown as well.
Okay, which makes it easy to do that public transportation.
Yes, it does. It does for sure.
So, growing up as a kid, would you ever have thought that you'd be doing the kind of work that you're doing today?
Nope, not at all. Not at all. I mean, at least when I was a teenager, I wasn't even thinking about this. I was thinking about maybe studying medicine or being a nurse, but I never thought about this, about gardening and being with nature and all of that. It never crossed my mind.
So, how did you get to where you are today, then?
Well, it's kind of a long story. So I went to a community college first, and then I transferred to a college. My last year of the community college was, which was, it took me 4 years. I was there for 4 years. In my very last semester, I took an environmental science class with a professor. And this professor, she was very like brutally honest with you with the things that were going on in terms of like the environment and the way that our actions affect the earth and just all that whole spectrum. And many of the times I would come out of the class crying because I couldn't like from all the things that I kind of felt overwhelmed with what she was like teaching us and showing us. So I would be come out crying and thinking like, oh, why? How could we be doing this? Why are we doing this? And things like that. Like that's what would go through my mind. And for spring break, she took a few of us on a trip, and it was a camping trip, and that was like my first official camping trip. I even tried to do cowboy camping in that trip, and it didn't work out too well, but I even tried that. So she took us on a camping trip, and she showed us a few places, like the Mojave Desert. I think we went to Arco Santi, and I forgot where else we went to. Oh, we went to Death Valley as well. And then after that whole class and after that whole like spring break trip, I decided I would just watch documentaries on how people have gone vegan or things like that on Netflix. So it was just like me just being curious about it. And it was more for the environmental reasons why I decided to watch those documentaries, and that's what led for me to going vegan. For environmental reasons and because of how like animals are treated and all of that. So then before I transferred, I had to decide which major I was going to do. And at the moment when I had before I had transferred, I had chosen to study nutrition. And by the time I was done with this class, the environmental science class, I was like, okay, well, I don't want to do this anymore. I had already applied, so I can't really change my major in the middle of it, so I'm gonna have to wait till I get there. And what I wanted to do was do some kind of major that had to do with environmental science or something in that realm. And so I took a whole year where I kind of basically almost wasted a year of taking classes. And then I finally decided I would do geography. And I ended up doing geography with a minor in sustainability. And my last year, so like technically my senior year, I was in charge of the food garden and the compost facility on campus. And from all my classes and sustainability minor, I wanted to continue that in some way. So I didn't want to sit in front of a computer because I also learned GIS for some of my classes. I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to sit behind a computer and be inside. And I wanted to continue with something that had to do with gardening. I didn't know in what way or how.
Stepping in here for a sec, I had to look up GIS, which Cindy mentioned studying. It stands for Geographic Information Systems, and it's a way of presenting and managing spatial or geographic data. Because a quick Google made my head spin, for Cindy, all we really need to know is that she wanted to keep working outside in gardens, and she didn't want to spend her days behind a screen.
So the semester was over, I graduated, and I was, for 4 months or 3 months, I was trying to figure out what I was going to do. And I found InReach LA, and it was about you know, the whole program was about teaching kids in the garden. And I ended up looking into it, taking a little internship at the beginning, and I stuck with it. And then at the same time, I also started a internship at a farm called Salvadoria Farms in Pomona. And I was doing that too. So I was also learning more about farming and growing food and all these other things. So I started with that. And so that teacher, that one specific teacher, led to all of this that I am doing now, from one thing to another. And then at the farm, there was we had one of our teachers, which her name is Manju. It was Manju and her son, Rishi. And Manju was, she taught basically everything I, in terms of zero waste, what I learned from her.
Wow.
So yeah, one thing led to another, but it was a whole, you know, it was throughout all these years, but only because of that one specific class. It's just it's crazy to think that that's where I am right now because of that specific class and specific professor.
Enrich LA is a nonprofit that builds edible gardens in Los Angeles schools. As part of their Garden Ranger program, Cindy helps maintain garden spaces and teaches lessons to students about nutrition, gardening, and environmental stewardship. When I talked to Cindy before our interview, she told me that she listens to this show, and one quote from a previous episode stood out.
You never know who's watching and who's learning from what you're doing, what you're saying. And real quick story, I have this one student who reached out to me on Facebook, and I taught him a couple of years ago, and he said to me, "Miss Valerio, I remember that time you told me I was really smart, and I didn't, but you know, I read on." And he said, "That meant a lot to me because nobody had ever told me that." Mm. I'm like, wow. Wow, and that was like 14 years ago.
Wow.
Those things stick. So like your words, your actions, the way you treat people, people remember that. And it all always, and that, you know, that creates this fabric of life that people have. And so like anything that you do, you know, whether it's positive or negative, people remember. And so you have to keep that in mind as you go through your life, go through your day, that you are a role model and you do have the power to change people's lives simply by living your own life and relating to people as humans.
That's Myrna Valerio, aka the Myrnavator. After talking with Cindy, it made sense why this quote stuck out. This one teacher had a profound effect on Cindy's life. And now Cindy wants to do the same for others. You've been influenced by this teacher and now you work with children too. What do you like about teaching?
At least with what I'm doing, I get to teach about gardening and plants and nature and all of that. So what I like of it, specifically, at least in my role, because I only teach about this, is that I get to teach kids about nature. I get to teach kids about the anatomy of a seed, the anatomy of a flower. I get to, like today, for example, my last school of the day, I was able to teach a little bit and have the kids think about Earth Day and Earth Week and how our actions affect the earth. And I've been able to teach about plastic pollution. So all these things that are important to me, I'm able to teach the kids, and hopefully they will, you know, they will start to change, or I will spark something in them that, just like that one professor sparked something in me, that I will spark something in them.
And at such a young age too.
Yes. So most of my kids are elementary school students, all the way up to sixth grade. So from pre-K all the way to sixth grade. So, I mean, I know I don't have too much time with them. It's usually like once a week for like about 45 minutes. But if I could just teach them about a little bit about nature during those 45 minutes, you know, like I just hope I can inspire them in some way or spark something.
Well, I think about you, like when you were a little girl and you're playing in the soil and finding worms and bugs, and that those kind of come back to you in glimmers, that your interactions with these kids could also come back to them too. And later when they have that environmental science class, something will click and they'll be like, oh, I know about this. I did learn about this. Or maybe they will talk with their family about it when they get a little bit older and might impact their family too.
And it's amazing to see when one of my students plants a seed and then they see it grow. Like, they're able to see all those little processes in the garden. And it makes me so happy. And it makes them so happy because they're like, oh my God, Ranger Cindy, look at this. Or like, they just get so excited in it. And it honestly just makes my heart happy to see that as well.
So you're teaching kids and you also use your social media platform to teach other people and share with other people what you're doing and how you're looking to have a lower or more minimal or, you know, striving for zero waste lifestyle.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I've been using my social media more as a way of trying to inspire others, even if it's just one person. I don't have like a huge following or anything, but I share what I can. So few examples of what I share. I share how I cook with my husband with vegan meals. And if I had people tell me that they enjoy watching our videos because we're goofy and we make it look so fun and that we inspire them to cook vegan or to cook as zero waste as possible. And so I've shared our cooking things. I've shared how I store my things, whether it's reusing a water bottle, reusing like a glass jar from a pickle jar or whatever it might be, where I get my things from bulk or refill stations, like anything I can think of. I also share a lot about my gardening too. I've shared like how some processes work with producing a seed and things like that. So I just share what I can, basically what I do in my daily life. And I've had people tell me that I have inspired them, and it makes my heart happy because at first I was like, why even post this? Are people even going to listen? Like, do they even care type of thing? But a lot of people are starting to tell me that I've inspired them in some way and that to keep sharing what I share.
We'll hear more from Cindy, including how to aim for a zero waste camping trip after this. Merrill exists to give you all you need to discover the simple yet profound power of the trail. I caught up with her own Noelle Russell about how she likes to hike in California.
In the Bay Area, we have a lot of great regional parks that actually have a pretty significant trail system. So that makes it easy to be able to, after work, run up and get a couple miles in out on the dirt and watch the sunset. They're also really navigable, so it makes it easy to hike in the dark, or if you're not, you know, even feeling great or you're getting back into shape, it's still, a lot of them are really doable.
How do you like the Ontario Mid hiking boots?
I love them. I was actually surprised because they look so substantial. I was surprised at how light they are. So I've had a lot of fun wearing them out on the trail, but I also, like, I wore out to drinks last night and I felt really cute. So I feel like they're kind of, you get more bang for your buck with them because they're really great shoes to wear on the day to day, but they also handle really well on the trail.
Stay tuned for more stories with Merrill this summer. And to learn more in the meantime, visit Merrill.com. That's MERRELL.com. We're back. Zero waste, low waste, they're kind of buzzwords. And when we hear words a lot, they start to lose their meaning. I asked Cindy to explain the concept of a low waste camping trip to me, even though it's kind of implied in the name. As it relates to camping, like, what is a zero waste camping trip?
So basically, at least how I view it, is you're trying to create the least possible waste from your trip. Trying to be prepared, reusing things. So for example, like, I would say for most of the time, at least from when I go camping and I see people, like other people around me, what I notice for most of the bulk of the trash is the plates, the napkins, forks and spoons, cups and all of that. Like, that's a very big bulk of the trash. So for me, zero waste camping would be taking things that are reusable, like your plates, your cups, your forks, and all of that. Taking meals that may possibly come from bulk, and like that, you're not bringing more plastic packaging into whatever place you're visiting. For example, I made a meal that was based on lentils. It was a sloppy joe lentils, and I'm able to get most of those ingredients in bulk. I made it ahead of time, and I took it in my Pyrex bowl. And at camp, all I did was take it out of there, and I heated it up in one of my pans. So, and then napkins as well. So anything for napkins, I take my reusable napkins. If I'm worried about drying dishes or cleaning up something, I also have towels for that. And then for drinks, well, I mean, water is something that, you know, you can drink, right? And then if I want to take anything else for drink, like maybe like beer or cider or, you know, kombucha or whatever it might be, I try to get those in aluminum can or glass because they have a high recyclable rate. So just creating the least possible waste.
Which sounds so much less intimidating than zero waste, you know, like somebody's going to feel like there's this unattainable standard. But when you think about it in terms of, wow, the waste that you produce from camping is usually just related to food.
And, you know, it also depends. Like, I just want to say this, that it also depends on your accessibility. Like, I always make sure to, like, if I'm sharing something on Instagram or whatever, I always tell people, like, it also depends on your access. You may not have a store that's nearby you that has bulk options or that has other options for certain things, or may have a refill station, whatever it might be. So it also depends on your access. So just trying your best to do what you can.
Yeah, I know with plastic straws, for example, a lot of times people can be really hard on people who use plastic straws. Like, I've seen it on social media, someone kind of criticizing someone for that. But that leaves out like whole population that might have to use plastic straws, you know, maybe because they're disabled and that's what's most accessible to them.
Very true. Not everybody has the same access. Some may have a disability, some, and it also depends on privilege too. If you have the access and privilege, that's awesome, but not everybody has the same access and privilege as you do.
Mm. Yeah, like you had the access to that teacher and that class that changed your life.
Yes, exactly. And I have access to a bunch of stores here, so.
One of the things that I loved when we connected on the phone the first time was you talking about how you like to, at times, act as like a bridge with your family or even with your husband, coaxing some small changes that feel like they're doable versus ostracizing people or feeling like it's you have to go all or nothing in terms of conservation and the lifestyle choices you make.
Yeah. So basically with, at least with my husband and, you know, here at home, I do things and I just show him how I do things, or like we go together and I tell him, okay, this is how we're going to do this. And also when I used to live at home, I used to, you know, like always have my reusable water bottle or do some vegan cooking or whatever it might be. And I just did these things and I tried my best not to like preach, or at least try to tell my husband, oh, don't do this, don't do that. Or like, I just try to just show him, and it's worked. And he's been learning from me a lot.
That's great. And he was totally on board to do a low waste wedding.
Yes, 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 he was. Yes. Yeah. He's actually the one who had to. So one of the things we did was reusable cups, glass cups. We had about, I want to say, 70 guests, and we wanted to give each guest a glass with their name on it, but it was going to be secondhand. So my husband was the one who had to go to all the thrift stores and find them. They were all unmatching, which was fine, but he was the one who had to go all over the place and try to find them.
Cindy and her husband met in high school. They're both of Mexican heritage, so they wanted that to be reflected in their Lois wedding by transforming a nursery in LA into a vegan taqueria. I've heard that planning that special day is a ton of work, so I was pretty impressed that they took on the extra effort of making it low waste. It turns out that I cut down on the cost and only added to the experience. So why did you want to have a low waste wedding?
Because I know that whether it's a party, whether it's a wedding, a birthday party, or, you know, whatever kind of celebration it is, there's always a lot of waste at the end. A lot of unnecessary waste that I feel like could be avoided. Also, just because of the lifestyle we do here at home and how I live, like, I'm always thinking about what can I do to prevent from me using something that I don't need or whatever it may be.
Yeah, just part of your values.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So one of the first things I did was my wedding dress and my veil. Just in general, for like a piece of clothes or, you know, your jeans or whatever it may be, it takes a lot of resources. It takes a lot of water, you know, material to get one piece of something done. And I wanted to purposely get a secondhand dress. So what I ended up doing, I went to a sample sale. So if you may not know, a sample sale usually is things that have been used by brides already, or brides that are looking for a dress. So they've been tried on. They might be a little ripped. They might be a little dirty. So technically, it is secondhand. So that's what I did. I looked for a secondhand dress, and I found one. Same with the veil. It was a sample of veil that I got. And I didn't want to get shoes that I was only going to wear once, because that's also another, like, material that you might buy and you're never going to use again. Maybe. I already had a pair of Chacos, but I wanted another pair of Chacos because I use those every single day for hiking, or even in the garden I've used them. So I use them every single day. So I got a pair of Chacos because I know that those pairs of shoes are going to be used for a good amount of time and every single day. So those were one of the first things that I did to start with. And I wanted to, and then the secondhand cups, the glass cups that we did, instead of using or buying individual, like, canned beer, we did kegs. That's why the glasses were there for. So people could just refill, whether it was a keg, the agua frescas from the food, or water. So it could be reused for multiple things. And what else did we do?
You had the flowers from Trader Joe's.
Yes. So we both work at Trader Joe's. My husband works there full time. I work there about once a week. But we asked, because usually every day they take out the flowers that are not good looking anymore, because usually if those flowers don't look nice, the consumer, whoever's, you know, there to buy it, won't buy it. So it ends up, you know, just going to the landfill. I mean, most of the time Trader Joe's will donate some of these flowers, but sometimes if the person who picks them up doesn't pick them up for the donation, they end up in the landfill. So we're like, okay, so how can we, you know, get involved in something where we don't have to, you know, go out of the way and buy flowers, or, you know, in that sense. But we ended up asking our managers if we could take whatever that day or the day before was going to be thrown out. And they gave us those. So we wanted to, you know, prevent something from going into the landfill. And we did have some few new flowers. They also, as a gift, they gave us some peonies, because that's the main flower we wanted there. And also the florist who did our flowers also added a few new flowers. But for the most part, they were flowers that were going to end up going into the trash.
I kind of love that, like, on top of the environmental benefit, it's also, it sounds like it was I would assume, a pretty good cost savings, too, to be working in, you know, a lower waste wedding. Like, it's kind of cool that there is this, like, dual benefit at play.
There is, because, I mean, even though I had to get my dress fixed and all these other things fixed up, my dress was only $300. The flowers, they were, you know, they were basically gifted. What else? I'm trying to think of what else. Oh, our invites. Sorry, I didn't mention this. Our wedding invites were from online, and they were free. We didn't have to buy any, you know, paper. We didn't have to waste any paper. There's a lot of ways that we saved in some way.
So that low-waist wedding in LA, it was actually plan B. But Cindy wanted to make plan A work too. And plan A was inspired by the environmental science teacher Cindy had, the catalyst for much in her life.
After we took that one specific spring break field trip with my professor, my environmental science professor, she's the one that really plugged me into wanting to explore the outdoors more. So later on, I think about a year later, I planned personally our first camping trip, where for me and my, well, now he's my husband, but back then he was my boyfriend. So I planned our first official camping trip, and it was to Yosemite. And it was just a really beautiful place. We fell in love with it, and we continued to go back for years. At one point, I think we were able to go twice or three times a year. I can't remember, but it's been a very special place to us. We really enjoyed that park. And we wanted to get married in Yosemite, and we had thoughts about having the whole wedding there. Like, there's one specific venue that has weddings in Yosemite, or that has like availability to have like a party, which is a Redwoods in Yosemite, I believe. We just wanted to be married within nature and have, you know, the trees surrounding us and all of that. Like, we just wanted that. It didn't work out how we originally were thinking. So what we ended up doing is, okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to exchange our vows in Yosemite. We weren't going to have our legal wedding there, so we didn't have anybody, you know, marry us in the park. It was just reading our vows to each other and having our friends who are photographers take pictures of us. So during our wedding week, we left, I believe, on Wednesday. Yes, we left on Wednesday night before the wedding, which our actual wedding was on Saturday. We left on Wednesday. We camped in the valley. I woke up like around, we got there late, which kind of sucked, but we got there late, I think around 11 p.m. actually. Uh-huh. And then I had to wake up at 3 so I can get ready before everybody woke up. So I got up around 3 or 3:30 to just do some simple makeup and get ready. And then everybody was up by 4. So we left at 4 a.m. to go up to Glacier Point. We really wanted that nice view of Half Dome, even though I know we haven't personally climbed it. You know, we just wanted that whole beautiful view of Yosemite. So we drove up to Glacier Point, and around 5 a.m., when I also put my dress up there, my two friends that were with me helped me put on my dress and my veil, and we were going to have our first look in the park. The girls helped me get ready, put my dress on, and then also my husband Edgar was getting ready with the photographer, which is also our friend. And then we did our first look right at sunrise. And we exchanged, you know, after we did our first look, we went to another part of the right at top at the Glacier Point, and we exchanged our vows. And it was beautiful. The sun was literally coming up right behind the Half Dome, and we cried. And it was just a very beautiful experience. And after we took all our pictures, we came back down and we ate, like, you know, some camp food and, you know, just camped again for that night. And then on Friday, we came back to LA and we had our wedding at a nursery on Saturday.
Oh.
So we were even surrounded with more plants, but this time it was, you know, potted plants and things like that. So that's what we ended up doing.
Oh, it sounds so perfect. I feel like people are going to listen to this and be like, this is what I want to do for my wedding.
Yeah, it was really awesome. I'm glad it turned out the way it did. It wasn't the original plan, but it turned out perfect and it was awesome. The venue we did our wedding at was, it's a nursery. So it has a bunch of potted plants. They're always selling, you know, whatever's in season. So it might be cucumbers or, you know, whatever it might be. So we were surrounded by all these plants and it was just awesome.
Oh, that's so great. Do you think plants will always be a part of your life?
Oh yeah. Okay. If hopefully one day if we own a home or we get a piece of land or wherever, I hope I can have my own farm or my own garden. Inside our house, we have about 50 houseplants.
Wow.
So I think they're going to be part of us forever for sure.
Are those hard to keep up?
Depends. If some are more picky. I mean, it depends on the environment. That's what I mean. More picky in what environment they're in. But overall, I've been getting the hang of them. I've killed a good amount of succulents. For some reason, they're supposed to be the easiest. They're not. And I think it must be that I overwater them or something. But overall, I'm still learning. I'm still learning how to take care of houseplants. But I've been doing pretty well. I've been on a pause right now for collecting houseplants.
50 is a good number for right now.
Yes. It's just, you know, a learning process. I'll get better at this next time. I'll pay more attention next time.
It's just like the mentality you take with zero waste.
Yeah. Yes.
Cindy Villaseñor teaches using her Instagram, villaseñor.cindy, by talking with her friends and family, and by being a garden ranger with Enrich LA. I'll make sure to list everywhere you can find her, including a gorgeous write-up of her low-waste wedding, in the show notes and via the episode landing page on she-explores.com. Also, Cindy doesn't just camp with her husband. She recently went on her first solo camping trip. We talked about it, and I posted it as bonus audio content on the episode landing page on she-explores.com. Thank you, Cindy, for the conversation. Thanks as well to our sponsor, Merrill. As usual, they're listed in the show notes. If you enjoy this podcast, there are two easy ways to help support us. First, spread the word. You can do this by leaving a review where you listen or sharing the podcast with a friend. Second, join our She Explores podcast Facebook group. It's super meaningful for me to be able to connect with listeners personally, and I love seeing you all connect with each other and ask each other for outdoor advice, as well as sharing in each other's triumphs and challenges. Music is by Lee Rosevere, Kay Angle, and Josh Woodward. Until next week, have fun out there.